Mini episode 1802 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode 1802. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries and our FDH Hoops analyst, Ben Chu. And we are coming at you for the 18th anniversary of the FDH Lounge, which first came on the air on the old Sports Talk Network January 14th, 2007. And I want to refer everybody back. This is a three-part series with our mini episodes, taking a look ahead to the second half of the 2020s in news, in sports, and in entertainment. This segment, if you go back to the early minutes of mini episode 1800, we've got a salute to the original FDH Lounge dignitaries that were a part of launching this thing, and many have been a part of the show ever since, and our panel that has occupied this space doing anniversary shows 2020 to 2022 and again in 2024. I will note Chris Galloway as a commonality between the two, an original who's been on many of our recent anniversary shows. But I am very, very happy to have Ben on here. We've done two great segments thus far. We're doing one right now on taking a look at entertainment and where we expect it to be different and in some ways sort of a continuation from the first half of the 2020s. And we talked about a little bit with ESPN spinning off into their own element here. We talked about it in the sports segment here, what that may do to the cable bundle, but just a sort of a greater, you know, amount of things overall, not just in the world of sports, but in entertainment that will be going direct to consumer, particularly, again, like as I said in the previous segment, everybody now owns, if not a smart TV, then a smart enabled TV. Like I've got a Roku stick on mine. So the accessibility to all of these things is going to be universal, and all the things in entertainment, concerts to a much greater degree, and other experiences that will be coming directly to the consumer.
Right, and I think the big question now is that we're focused, we're in the streaming world right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In 2020, it was still a different world. Like, there was, it was still only one or two couple streaming services, and now we're fully in the big five era, and then we're also seeing a lot of the cable companies starting to spin off. Obviously, NBC was a big one with CNBC, MSNBC, and all these other things, too. And the big question I think ultimately has is, we also talked about in the sports episode with now Hulu plus live TV joining essentially with Fubo essentially joining the Disney family, mm-hmm. how that impacts pricing moving forward in terms of these cable bundles that are not directly tied to a cable provider. So it's going to be very interesting to see where we get our entertainment. And especially now too, Rick, we always tend to forget entertainment that YouTube is still a huge mm-hmm. player in this space. Like if you look at some of the raw data in terms of Gen Z and also just everyone in general, YouTube right now is probably in the top three top streaming apps, period, right now.
Yeah.
In terms of total watch time.
Well, and it was hugely instrumental in the last presidential election because of so many of the podcasts that both candidates, Trump primarily, but Harris to some degree, going on podcasts that had probably, for the most part, their widest distribution on YouTube. So it really is sort of permeating all areas of life here. And ultimately, YouTube being a direct-to-consumer kind of a deal, yeah, there's going to be more and more and more of these things happening. And you have to wonder also, too, in terms of, you know, the whole thing towards, you know, concert touring. It did end up seeing, you know, a comeback after COVID. I mean, a fairly substantial comeback. But I've got in my show notes here that, you know, outside of Taylor Swift and a few others, maybe Beyonce, there's been a lot of, like, nostalgia-oriented touring that you've seen in there. And sometimes, you know, two or three acts coming together on a bill. But I'm seeing groups coming to, you know, the big arena in Cleveland here, where I'm just like, really? They're playing that arena in 2024, now 2025? So there's a large nostalgia component that has been a part of touring in recent years, as has been also with comedy, stand-up comedy, with Shane Gillis and others doing arena shows on the regular, when you wouldn't generally see that.
Right. We've seen, like, a lot more stand-up comedians playing to big arenas. We've seen, you know, Nate Bargatze, Joe Coy.
Yeah.
We've seen a lot of these tours start to begin on the comedy aspect. And this has been a tremendous sort of 4 years for comedy, just with the ability for Netflix to put your name out there more. And on top of that, just being able to distribute your content easily in a bite-sized format, whether it's on social media or if it's on YouTube, so that you can get your profile out there quicker and faster than any other period of time in America.
Yeah. Well, and what's happened too is with comedy, just, you know, the sort of, and every industry has seen, you know, to some degree, a decentralization of the power bases. But in terms of it, there was a great book that I read by, he was the Time Magazine, I think, entertainment editor at the time, Richard Zoglin, about the revolution in stand-up comedy in the 1970s. And then it was one of those things where it was the Tonight Show. That was so central to everything. You get your spot on the Tonight Show. And essentially now, it is this network of podcasts, many of whom are manned by the very comedians that are out there doing the stand-up shows here. But, like, you go on there, if you're on any of the different comedians' stand-up shows, you know, this is sort of the equivalent of going on the Tonight Show back in the day. But there's so many different ones where you can go out there, where you can create a profile for yourself, where you can get people really psyched to see you in person.
And I think the biggest thing, too, that you has caused a rise, obviously, would be the Instagram Explorer page and TikTok,
yeah,
which allows you to have these bite-sized jokes.
Yeah.
It allows people to get that integration. And a big thing, too, is that I think ultimately, when we talk about future stand-up comedy, we're going to have to talk about Netflix-related.
Yes.
Because they have made a handful of stars from comedians that were pretty much less than relevant at the period of timeline. Like, if you look through the list of people that have been stand-up comedians, they've been on that list. It's been pretty insane if you think about it.
Yes. Oh, no question about it. And when you're talking about the ways that we're going to be disseminating entertainment in the next couple of years, maybe stand-up comedy will play a part in this as well. I don't know. But it seems made for sports and for concerts. This is one of the things that just made it onto my roster in recent days. You've probably been aware of this a little longer than I am. This whole COSM deal, known also as the Dome. And that's where I'm just going to read you a little bit of copy off of their page for the experience. Quote, immerse yourself in awe. The Dome is more than just a front row seat to your favorite sporting or entertainment event. It will make you reimagine what's possible with live content and redefine how you experience it with your friends. When you're in the Dome, you're completely immersed. A revolutionary technology makes you feel like you're courtside in an NBA game or traveling to a world beyond your own. Food and drink are always there at your fingertips through the mobile app by ordering with one of our servers. So to be able to capture an experience, I mean, this goes beyond, like, hey, we're going to go down to the sports bar tonight and have some chicken fingers and watch the game. Like, you're actually in a mini arena that simulates being in the game arena itself, or taking in a concert in a way that basically simulates, like, literally being there. So as far, this isn't necessarily what we would consider to be virtual reality, the way that it's been discussed and hypothesized for the last 30 years. You're not putting anything on your head or anything like that. You're literally traveling to be at a place with your friends, but you're partaking of it in a way that also suggests all of the things about virtual reality that people have always said will be cool when it finally gets here.
Right, and I think one of the bigger questions, too, is that experiential entertainment at that
point.
Yes. Like, you're essentially the whole cause of narrative. And we saw this, too, with the Las Vegas Sphere. And overall, is that it's creating a unique aspect of, to entertainment that we did not have before. Like, if you wanted to go watch a game at a stadium, you had to go to a stadium to watch a game. And as much as, you know, all of us probably love being in the cold or having to trek out and get stuck behind a fan who is throwing popcorn and is screaming kids trying to calm them down, it's a unique experience, but it's also an experience that I think a lot of people, they kind of, it's almost a weird sterilization almost. It's almost I am immersed in this game, but I also have the ability to sit in this giant comfy chair.
Yes.
And order from a waitress. So it almost feels like it's a next step. And I think we've seen it too also with movies. Movies have made a huge comeback in the last couple of years since the pandemic. And also we're now in the timeline of 4D and 5D. We're in experience. It almost feels like, Rick, we went from a timeline where we were happy to watch a movie at a theater, and now it feels like we need to have something else. Because now we've experienced a world where we all have big TVs and can rent movies on demand. And Cosm is just the latest step in that. We're probably going to get to a point, too, where we're going to see, like, mini Cosms or even different companies. Like, we've been in a real world with entertainment. We've seen, you know, Topgolf fly on the roof at this point. They've done fantastic. And there's the iterations of that. There's going to be a baseball version, a basketball version.
Yeah.
So in terms of just, I know this is not entertainment as we see it, but that's still part of the ecosystem at this period of time. Like that's, well, it's something that you spend your money on and spend your time on.
Sure. And interestingly, something that's kind of a hybrid of what we're talking about here, it actually just debuted the other night on ESPN, and it's going to be running throughout the winter, is that there's now a league component here with the PGA, with where the top golfers are in there with different teams, and it's in an arena-type setting, but they're playing on a virtual course, but you finish on an actual green, and it's, you know, and how they make that not feel like it's a putt-putt green, I don't know exactly the science of that, but anyways, you're seeing something there, and given the fact that the drive shot, and I think also maybe potentially an approach shot are on simulators, it is a, you know, it's a merging of what's real and what's, you know, what's not, essentially. And there's a crowd there to see it. So it's not exactly the Cosm experience, but it's suggestive of the whole thing and suggestive of something that I think could be a dominant way to kind of take in entertainment in the next 5 years and beyond.
Right. And I think people are wanting to have that big screen experience.
Yeah.
Like we want the small screen experience essentially too. So,
yeah.
And again, I think one of the biggest trends I think we are going to see, like if specifically if the TikTok ban happens, we're going to see more people mitigate to other platforms to watch their entertainment and watch their content.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the biggest thing that we weren't in streaming right now is it isn't the Wild Wild West anymore. Everyone can't throw $50 million to create new shows now. What it is essentially now, it's very selective, or it's very, this is a broad enough audience that we could see this show succeeding. So I think that's going to be one of the big things too, is that people are going have more options than ever before in the history of mankind to watch entertainment.
And yeah, they do. It's
very interesting to see how our viewing decisions change.
Yes. Yes. Because they always do based on what becomes available and everything. And so you've got these things that, again, you know, you're moving from just what had previously been sort of complete reality as far as how you take it in, a literal experience of watching a thing on a screen, to this sort of augmented reality. And I go back and I've joked about this on the show repeatedly, that one of the things that's hilarious to me that nobody ever talks about. So the movie, on the tip of my tongue there, I was going to say Indecent Proposal, but it wasn't that. I think it was Disclosure. The 1994 movie, the one with this reverse sexual harassment where Michael Douglas's character gets sexually harassed. Is it Disclosure? Okay. So that's one where everybody focuses on that as far as the hot button topic of sexual harassment and everything like that. But that's a thing where the the funniest part to me is they're talking about, it's all built around, you know, this virtual reality stuff, this platform that's being developed, and, oh, this big thing in the future. And you watch this movie 31 years later, and it's like, yeah, when are we going to get to that point? I mean, like, we're not even starting.
I mean, in a way, too, I know we're going to talk about AI at some point in this.
Yeah, that's what we're going to wrap up.
Seeing the rise of, you know, internet girlfriends and chatbots.
Yeah.
And replicating the experience of talking with someone. And that's going to be a big thing, too.
Yes.
I mean, the one thing we also have to discuss on, and then there's also the moral aspects of it. We've seen some, you know, chatbots say some controversial things. We had that whole issue with Instagram pop up a couple months back with these AI-created profiles.
Mm-hmm.
So the question ultimately is going to be is that, and I think it's going to be an interesting start for entertainment, is like, we're only like 11 years off from the movie Her scenario already happening in real life.
Yeah.
So it's only going down the line that we're going to have a more connected, disconnected narrative for entertainment. And it's, and again, too, I feel like for this segment specifically with entertainment, it used to be such a very small thing. It used to just be TV, movies, going out to events. And now it feels like it is a broad topic now with streaming, with concerts, with experiences. And then we've seen escape rooms. Across the United States and Canada to just have that experiential entertainment. I think coming off of the pandemic where we were all very focused in a very enclosed space, we're seeing a lot more experiential entertainment do very well because of that.
I fully agree. And that is a very, very interesting topic that people are finding new ways to be able to participate in things with their friends. And so again, as this all continues to evolve, like you said there, because we've talked about it in the two previous mini episodes, AI sort of looms over every topic that we're going to have for the second half of the decade here. How that manifests itself in entertainment, that is a thing where, and again, I don't know that this necessarily falls within entertainment, although it's closer to entertainment than the last two. But as far as like the world of influencers, like I would brush up my resume for any of the AI influencers out there, particularly of the young female variety, because the AI ones that are out there, if they're indistinguishable from the young gals that are doing this stuff here now, then why would anybody be paying you when they could be getting this stuff done basically for free and making money off of something that doesn't even exist?
We discussed this on the previous episode and just talking in terms of news and sports, the previous episodes. We're getting, especially for entertainment now, I do think one of my mini predictions is we're going to see a boom of individual creators who normally would not be able to do these sort of things because they didn't have the ability, because we now exist in a world with Sora, with OpenAI, where we can create worlds with just a couple of keystrokes.
Yeah.
In comparison to before, where like I remember when I was creating content in the late 2000s, early 2010s, where you were hamstrung to what you could physically do.
Right.
And now it's just really, it comes down to, can you afford to do it? And we're going to see some great storytellers come from this. Like before, it used to be literally, unless you were in Hollywood or doing TV and movies, that was the only way you can create entertainment. And now we have completely done a 180. You can be anyone, anywhere, at any time with an idea. And if you get your audience, you have the ability to create things. And another thing that we haven't even really talked about on this pod, and I know we'll talk about it in the future too, is obviously the rise of Spotify, the rise of YouTube Music, the rise of Apple Music, Tidal. For the world of music, it's also in SoundCloud, we've seen people become famous from the internet and translate over to other things. Before it was because of your, I would say, just ability level. But we're going to start to see creators who just have that overall creativity that can now become household names because of artificial intelligence. And it's going to be great to see, but then we're also have to deal with this flip side of the coin, which is a lot of people are probably not going to be able to create careers from that at a period of time, because if I can create a mini short film that can win an Oscar potentially using Sora or anything from OpenAI or Copilot.
Yeah.
It just feels like if anyone can do it, then why do I need all these other people? If I can do as anything as somebody is typing into a computer rig.
Yeah.
It skips a lot of steps.
Yeah. There were, you know, actors like Justine Bateman would say you're creating virtual scabs because they're taking jobs away from actors. And I joked about it in the opening segment that, you know, James Dean, biggest movie star of the 2030s, but we're getting there. The fact that you can go on YouTube today and you can hear Johnny Cash do a rendition of Barbie Girl that sounds like the Folsom Prison stuff in that very same style, and all these other things where the real voices and the real personas are being appropriated. Yeah, again, where are the boundaries on these things? Where does it all go? What's the intellectual property if it's somebody who looks almost exactly like something? I remember back in the 90s when the Tribe was in the World Series, there were people selling bootleg Chief Wahoos because if you had like one less tooth in the mouth, you weren't violating the trademark. So is that where we're at here? Are we at a thing where if the voice is like 0.0001% different on some kind of a scale, or the visualization is, or whatever, where there's plausible deniability? Like, this really is the wild, wild west. And what a way to kind of wrap this segment on, Ben, because that's the most fascinating part of this, is that we have no idea where this particular area, maybe the most important area of entertainment, is going
to
be going.
And I feel like, too, Rick, just to finish on this, knows that there are the big question, I think, for content creators, which is part of the entertainment field, is if TikTok and social media gets impacted by all these things that are occurring just in the world, how is entertainment going to be impacted? Who will rise, who will fall? Because again, everything comes down to the algorithms.
That's right.
It comes down to who has that ability. And another thing that we also have to know too is like I've mentioned a lot of things, but I haven't even mentioned Twitch yet.
Yeah.
Twitch is a huge platform for whether you're a voiceover artist or if you're a gamer. And we've seen live streaming come from like what we were doing at Sports Talk Cleveland, this tiny little room that was kind of a little blurry on a camera.
Yeah.
And now everyone has HD quality images in their cell phone at this point. So it's kind of a golden age of entertainment. But then we also have the flip side of that, is that there's just going to be a lot of stuff out there that we're just going to have to monitor and see what happens. Because the best part about being able to create content, Rick, is that you can create content. But then there's also the negative, because there's a lot of content that maybe we don't want to see. Like, I'll bring up the Jerry Springer documentary that recently came out on Netflix. That was a big one, too. I mean, we've moved from people wanting something direct to wanting chaos and intrigue.
Right.
And stuff like, you know, with the Beast Games, the Mr. Beast show on Amazon Prime, that's going to be a big thing too. People tuning in to watch YouTubers and influencers do their thing is
right. A
huge discussion moving on in the future of will you get fair pay? Will you be able to build your career off this? Because we've seen this too with Gen Z. It's one of the biggest things that they want to be content creators. And again, we've seen it in Hollywood. That was partially why the strike was related to AI to begin with. And we now are going to see in the next couple of years the spoils of what we live in a world where if anyone can create anything, what are we going to create? And we have to assume percentage of it is not going to be palatable for the human eye.
Yeah. So there's going to be all kinds of stuff coming here. And that's where we covered through these mini episodes here for the course of the anniversary, of course, news, sports, and now entertainment, looking ahead to the second half of the 2020s. And I couldn't think of anybody better to do it with if I was just going to grab one of the FDH Lounge dignitaries for this. Our FDH Hoops analyst, Ben Chu, thank you so much, my friend.
Well, I appreciate it as always, Rick.
Thanks, buddy. It was awesome. And thank everybody for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1802.